continues unabated against the Gaza Strip, and the focus of the Israeli attacks is Gaza City itself, as the air strikes are still relentlessly targeting and indiscriminately targeting the civilians and the remaining high-rise buildings in the city in order to terrorize the people and to force them out of the city. The Israeli occupation army is committing massacres in continuation of its Gaza occupation plan and is actually pressing ahead in advancing towards the most populated areas and neighborhoods in the north of Gaza. People or locals from Gaza City are reporting that the Israeli tanks are approaching towards the heart of the city from three different axes. The first is from Al-Karama area towards Ash-Shatta refugee camp, the very populated area and the very densely populated area in the west of Gaza City. And the other is from Ash-Sheikh Ridwan near Birkat Ash-Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood. And that actually leads directly to the heart of the city. The Israeli occupation army is also progressing from the south of Tal al-Hawa neighborhoods towards Al-Zaytun. And by this progression, the Israeli occupation army is carpet bombing the areas ahead or paving the way towards the heart of the city. This dawn, the Israeli occupation army committed a massacre against Dokhmush family in Tal al-Hawa neighborhood that resulted in the killing of eight of the same family after targeting the residential building.
The U.S. administration is preparing another multi-billion dollar arms package for Israel, signaling a fresh surge of support for the regime. This as Tel Aviv faces growing international isolation over its genocidal war in Gaza. The White House has informed Congress of plans to sell nearly $6 billion worth of weapons to Israel, including Apache helicopters and infantry assault vehicles. Washington continues arming Israel despite mounting international pressure and efforts by a growing number of Senate Democrats to block such sales. The Trump administration has already approved $12 billion in major military assistance to Israel this year. The deals are part of a 10-year U.S.-Israel military agreement that is nearing its end. Since October 2023, several countries, including Italy, Japan, Spain, Canada, Colombia, the Netherlands and Belgium, have halted arms sales to Israel over its carnage of tens of thousands of civilians in Gaza. Portugal has announced its intention to recognize a Palestinian state, joining a list of European countries that have made a similar decision as global outcry towards Israeli genocide continues. The Portuguese foreign minister says his country will officially recognize a Palestinian state on Sunday. It comes ahead of a UN General Assembly where around 10 other countries are set to follow suit. Lisbon has said the decision is because of the unprecedented level of Israeli carnage in Gaza, coupled with the regime's continuous annexation of Palestinian lands in the occupied West Bank. So far, 10 out of 27 EU countries have recognized Palestine. Britain, France and Canada are also among Western countries planning to recognize Palestine at the upcoming UN General Assembly. In South Africa, protesters have gathered at the new Amazon Web Services headquarters in Cape Town to voice their opposition to the company's collaboration with Israel. Beyond condemning Amazon's support for the Israeli regime, activists argue that the company's expanding presence in Africa facilitates the spread of Israeli surveillance and spying across the continent.
Amazon Web Services is complicit in the driving of genocidal tech in the occupied territories, shows a particular a combination that simply cannot be ignored, that these multinational corporations are enacting not just genocidally, but in the same mindset as colonial powers did, as the Dutch East India Company did.
The Israeli government gave Google and Amazon a contract worth $1.2 billion called Project Nimbus, and that has enabled the Israeli government to have endless data services. They have been able to get surveillance and technology, AI technology, to surveil Palestinians. There are a couple of programs baked into that, like Lavender and Where's Daddy?
The Israeli occupation force, okay. They are one of the most tech-hungry you know, armies in the world. They use the computing power that companies like Amazon provide, you know, and the kind of algorithms that they help fine-tune on these things to target where the bombs are going to fall. So they are directly an enabling technology. I mean, just like, you know, a tank cannot run without petrol. This modern warfare cannot run without this high technology infrastructure that companies like Google and Amazon and Microsoft are providing.
The Israeli regime has heightened security measures in the occupied Palestinian territories after a car incident in the Tel Aviv that left at least one Israeli dead. Israel's Channel 12 has reported the incident as a suspected car ramming attack. The driver reportedly fled the scene and a search is on the way to arrest him. Israelis inside and outside the occupied territories have faced multiple attacks since the outbreak of the regime's genocidal war in Gaza in 2023. On Friday, a man was arrested in the Netherlands for allegedly attempting to set fire to the Israeli embassy in The Hague. A day earlier, a Jordanian truck driver shot and killed two Israeli soldiers at the main border crossing between the occupied West Bank and Jordan. The Committee to Protect Journalists has reported that 31 journalists and media workers were killed in Israeli airstrike on a newspaper complex in Yemen last week. The September 10th strikes targeted offices of the newspapers 26th of September and Yemen Daily in the capital Sana'a. At least 22 journalists were also injured in the attacks. The regime's army claimed that it had struck military targets belonging to the Ansarullah resistance movement. The attack marked the deadliest single strike on the press since 2009, when 32 journalists were killed in an attack in Philippines' southern province of Maguindanao. Since the beginning of its genocidal war on Gaza in 2023, Israel has also killed hundreds of journalists in the Palestinian territory and Lebanon. The UN Security Council has rejected a bid to keep sanctions relief for Iran, paving the way for renewed UN sanctions within days. Iran has slammed the move, calling any attempt by the European trio to reimpose sanctions baseless and a direct assault on international law.
Iran implemented the deal in full and in good faith. No other nation has ever subjected itself to such rigorous, intrusive verification by IAEA. We kept our words, the EU, Italy, and US did not. It was the United States that unilaterally tore up the agreement in 2018, imposing sanctions in open defiance of this council. It was the Italy that failed to meet their obligation, hiding behind empty promises while quietly following Washington's lead and instructions.
Iran's ambassador to the UN, Amir Saeed Iravani, emphasized that in a striking display of hypocrisy, the European trio and the US claimed that Tehran must be punished for measures it took only years after enduring their violations. The three European countries triggered the snapback process last month, accusing Iran of breaching uranium limits set by the 2015 nuclear deal. That mechanism, which is set to expire on October 18th, allows any JCPOA participant to restore UN sanctions unless the Council votes to stop it. If no deal is reached by September the 28th, international sanctions suspended under the nuclear deal will automatically return. Iran has strongly condemned France, Germany and the UK for a provocative and unlawful action at the UN Security Council. In a statement, Iran's foreign ministry warned that if the move leads to the return of sanctions, the full responsibility will lie with the US and its European allies. The ministry said the push to revive sanctions lacked consensus and faced serious opposition from several council members, calling it a blow to diplomacy and a threat to the global non-proliferation regime. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister has held a phone call with the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency. The minister criticized the, quote, politicized atmosphere at the IAEA Board of Governors meeting, stressing that Iran's cooperation with the agency remains within international regulations. He said Iran does not accept any political action or unfair pressure that could lead to an escalation of tensions. Ukraine says its drones have targeted a major oil refinery deep inside the Russian territory for the second time this week. Russian residents in Saratov have reported hearing at least 11 explosions during the night. The major refinery is nearly 600 kilometers east of the front line in Ukraine. Ukrainian forces also launched a series of drone attacks in Russia's Kursk and Belgorod regions. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials reported that Russian drone and rocket strikes killed three civilians in Vasilivka and Poloivka. Russian forces also seized two villages in Ukraine's Donetsk and Zaporizhia regions. The conflict, which began in February 2022, has triggered a prolonged and destructive war across the region. Moscow has cited increasing NATO military presence near its borders as the root cause of the conflict. Estonia says three Russian fighter jets have violated its airspace for 12 minutes in what the Eastern European country called an unprecedentedly brazen incursion. Estonia's government said three MiG-31 warplanes entered its airspace in a very clear act of provocation. The government also said it had summoned the Russian envoy to lodge a protest and deliver a note. Estonian Foreign Minister Margus Tsahkna separately called for a strong response from NATO. Just over a week ago, Poland also said around two dozen Russian drones violated its airspace. Moscow rejected that claim as a fabrication to derail Ukraine peace talks. In the US, President Donald Trump's popularity continues to drop amid increasing economic and cultural chaos. According to the latest survey, Trump's approval rating among the independent voters has hit its lowest level. Ramin Mazari reports from Washington, D.C.
A new poll shows that President Donald Trump is losing the support of the largest unofficial political party in the United States, independent voters. A latest top survey found that 57% of all Americans now disapprove of Trump's performance, a record low for his second term. Trump's approval could fairly be said to be at its lowest point in either of his two terms. His net approval rating of minus 18 points is the second lowest ever recorded for him, and many pollsters disregard the accuracy of a minus 21 approval rating recorded in November 2017.
I think there's so much going on that it's really hard to even start. But one of the biggest things is he just keeps skirting the line of what's appropriate. And every single time that he gets closer to that line, getting towards inappropriate, he's just getting so close. And everyone knows the game that he's playing. And the game that he's playing is, how much can I get away with? And nobody likes that.
I didn't approve of him when he came in for the second term. Certainly his attacks on our freedoms, attacking organizations like this who are standing up and speaking against him, and of course what he's doing, under the guise of, undocumented immigration and detaining people without cause and just all the, all the rhetoric.
Trump's low approval rating is also being attributed to the recent assassination of an Islamophobic but very popular right-wing commentator, which many are calling a watershed moment in increasingly violent American politics.
The assassination has led to increased calls for anti-Trump protesters to be stopped, arrested, investigated, and even deported. That has many accusing the administration of using McCarthyite tactics to silence freedom of speech.
I think a lot of people are afraid to come out. You oppose Trump, you get primaried and knocked out of office, or you oppose Trump and you get a pizza sent to your house saying, I know where you and your wife and your kids live. It's just total dictatorship.
Despite being the richest country in the world, inequality in America is so rampant that a recent study found that 67% of workers live paycheck to paycheck. That's an almost 7% increase since just last year, and the poll only represents people who are employed. Last week, jobless claims hit a four-year high. Polls show that price inflation and jobs are the two most important issues for voters. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
And with that, we bring this news bulletin to an end. It's goodbye from me, Bahman Ray. We'll be right back.
که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters in faith who are listening to RIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad. I'm the host of this show. In this episode, we're going to talk about one of the sayings of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, that is very influential, and we can learn many lessons from that. Imam Khomeini said, "The one who relies on Allah will be helped. He is Mansur." Mansur comes from the word Nasr. It means victory. Okay? Mansur means a person who will be victorious. We have in the Quran, "وَمَن نَصْرُ إِلَّا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ الْعَزِيزِ الْحَكِيمِ." So, you know, it's very related, actually, because if Allah helps you, you will definitely become victorious. Okay, so is this something that we have to keep in mind in our lives? Definitely. We should always rely on Allah, not ourselves. Okay, we shouldn't say that, oh, I have a lot of money, I can buy whatever I want, why should I even think of Allah or rely on Him when I have so much money? But the question is, who gave you all that money? Did you just make money by yourself, like without Allah giving you the ability to make that money based on your skills and your knowledge? Okay, so this is extremely important, that everything that we have is from Allah, and whatever good things happen to us, they're thanks to Allah. Allah is the one who has provided us with the necessary tools to achieve success in this world and the hereafter. And that is why we should always rely on Allah. So, if we rely on Allah in our activities, we will be mansur. Allah will help us. Allah will grant us victory, right? إِن تَنْصُرُ اللَّهُ يَنْصُرْكُمْ وَيُثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَكُمْ. If you help Allah, Allah will help you and make your feet steady. Okay, so the point is that we have to always rely on Allah. Not just whenever we face a problem or we have, you know, like for our difficulties and we want to solve our problems, we say, oh, Allah, help me. No, even when we are in comfort, even when everything is going according to our plans, we should still rely on Allah. We should remember Allah, and we should always know that if it wasn't for Allah, we would perish. And that's it for today's episode of Spring of Truth. Thank you very much for being with us.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say.
was Spring of Truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Isfahan. For centuries, travelers called it Nisfe Jahan, half the world. Its turquoise domes and graceful bridges earned it famed as one of the most beautiful cities in the East. But today, behind the historic facades, lies another story. One of factories, greenhouses, research parks, and investment. This is the story of an Iranian city whose economy is as vibrant as its culture. With a population estimated at over 2 million in recent years, Isfahan has emerged as one of Iran's leading economic hubs. Expanding industries, rising domestic and foreign investment, modernizing urban infrastructure are all part of the city's success story. Today, we explore the opportunities that make Isfahan a magnet for investors. Situated in the geographic heart of Iran, Isfahan province has over 5 million residents and borders 9 provinces. Its highways and railways connect Tehran in the north to the Persian Gulf in the south, and its international airport links Asia to Europe. That geography has made it a natural hub for trade, logistics, and commerce. In Isfahan, history runs deep. And for Governor Mehdi Jamali-Nejad, that history carries a responsibility. He told us the province has always been a pioneer in knowledge, and today it's determined to live up to that reputation through a new wave of initiatives designed to keep Isfahan at the forefront of innovation.
From antiquity, Isfahan has been a cradle of knowledge, a true Darul Ilm, a city of science. Across multiple eras, when Isfahan served as the nation's capital, under the Buyids, the Seljuks, and Safavids, it was consistently recognized as a global center of scholarship, producing knowledge and disseminating it worldwide. Today, that heritage continues through our vast science and research park and through Iran's first official special technology zone headquartered here. This zone already attracts companies from neighboring countries. For us to remain faithful to this legacy, we must consistently equip ourselves with the latest technologies and industries of the future.
As one of Iran's major metropolitan centers, Isfahan combines developed infrastructure, a highly skilled workforce, and a strategic central location. These factors create unique opportunities across multiple sectors, from manufacturing and technology to logistics and services. For many investors, this city is more than a destination. It's a gateway to growth. The next step took us to the heart of commerce. Ali Safar Nurullah, a leading voice in the nation's trade sector and a member of Isfahan's Chamber of Commerce, painted a picture of a province long recognized as one of Iran's industrial powerhouses.
You know that Isfahan is Iran's second most industrialized city. A very large share of the nation's major industries are concentrated here. Among them are not only our smaller industries, but also some of the crown jewels of Iran's industrial base, steel, oil, and petrochemicals. Alongside these giants, there are nearly 8,000 small and medium-sized businesses that employ large numbers of people. Economically, Isfahan punches above its weight The province accounts for 4% of Iran's total population, but it contributes nearly 7.5% of national output. Compared to many other regions of the country, Isfahan's overall economic conditions are stronger and more favorable.
Isfahan is home to more than 9,000 industrial units, the second largest cluster in Iran. Steel is king. The Mubarakeh Steel Complex alone produces about 60% of the nation's steel, making it the largest producer in West Asia and North Africa. It's also the world's top supplier of sponge iron. But steel is only part of the story. Isfahan produces 12% of Iran's cement, dominates the textile industry with 35% of national output, and leads in gold and jewelry workshops. The Isfahan oil refinery supplies nearly a quarter of the country's petroleum products. Add aerospace manufacturing and one of the largest domestic transport fleets in Iran, and you have a truly diversified industrial base. Mr. Nurullah said the story is changing from factories and smokestacks to knowledge-based industries, and he welcomes every effort pushing in that direction.
The future, however, does not lie in producing ton after ton of cheap steel to sell at a discount abroad. That model belongs to yesterday, and largely to third world economies. What the world is moving toward, and what Isfahan must focus on, is technology, knowledge-based enterprises, and innovation. That is why Iran's official innovation corridor is headquartered in Isfahan. Within and around the city's science and research park, about 900 technology-driven and innovative companies are already active. They are pioneering new approaches and preparing to compete internationally. We have placed almost all of our energy behind nurturing these companies in the hope that they will become the drivers of future exports.
Despite water challenges, Isfahan's 563,000 hectares of farmland are highly productive. It ranks first in dairy, producing over 2 million tons annually, second in poultry and egg production, and third in honey. Modern greenhouses cover more than 2,400 hectares, making Isfahan the leader in greenhouse farming. The province is also a key source of apples, potatoes, herbs, and medicinal plants. Governor Jamalinejad was quick to make a distinction. Isfahan, he reminded us, isn't just a city, it's an entire province, rich with potential at every level. And it's that broader canvas, he says, where the future of innovation will be written.
Our development vision is not limited to the city of Isfahan itself. Investment must be spread fairly and evenly across the province's many towns. And the industries we establish must meet 21st century standards. Water neutral, carbon sensitive, high tech, and environmentally clean. We have identified about 300 projects distributed across the province, from Fereydun Shahr to Khansar, Golpaygan, Mubarakeh, Kashan, and Semiran. In late September, we'll present these projects at a major economic forum, inviting investors from inside Iran and abroad to review and participate. Mass preparatory work permits, feasibility studies, security assurances has already been completed.
For investors, that means opportunities in irrigation systems, food processing, and agritech, sectors where demand is growing both at home and abroad. Isfahan's industrial might is powered by brains as much as machines. And then we met Farid Nejad Bakhsh, chairman of Isfahan's Association of Knowledge-Based Companies.
اصفهان رو اگر بخوایم یک وضعیت کلی از حوزه اقتصاد دانش بنیان درش تعریف کنیم
Roughly 10% of all Iran's knowledge-based companies are located in Isfahan, over 1,000 firms. This is no accident. Isfahan was the birthplace of Iran's science parks. Sheikh Bahai Science Park was the first, and the Isfahan Research and Technology Park remains the only comprehensive research township in the country. Its original plan envisioned not just laboratories and workshops, but also residential areas, schools, and services. Essentially a self-contained city of 20,000 people where scientists and innovators could both work and live. Much of the industrial and workshop infrastructure has already developed. Residential and service expansions are expected in the coming years.
Mr. Nejat Bakhsh's story was about science, technology, and ambition. Behyar Sanat isn't chasing profits. It's taking on the kinds of challenges most would call impossible, from building radiotherapy devices to localizing entire systems once thought out of reach. And Mr. Nejat Bakhsh said that's only the beginning. Aerospace, telecommunications, transportation, energy, even smuggling control.
Earlier, I mentioned how our engineering designs can serve multiple industries. For example, the same linear accelerator system we first built for cancer treatment has now been adapted for customs inspection to scan containers for contraband. This flexibility comes from the fact that we own the full design. Once the blueprint is ours, we can apply it across different sectors.
For the CEO of Behyar Sanat, every breakthrough is more than engineering. It's proof that science can serve the people first. On a tour of his company, Mr. Nejat Bakhsh showed us the radiotherapy machines his team had built. Most of his staff, he told us, are in their 30s, young, determined, and innovative.
One of the most sophisticated features we have developed is a device that mounts onto the accelerator's output. Its job is to shape the radiation beam so that it strikes only the tumor and avoids healthy tissue. The mechanism uses 142 movable leaves. These leaves slide back and forth, adjusting in real time to match the exact contour of the tumor. Radiation passes only through the open segments, delivering precision treatment.
Prestigious institutions such as Isfahan University, the Isfahan University of Technology, and the Isfahan University of Medical Sciences, this city is a powerhouse of talent. Highly educated graduates fuel innovation in knowledge-based industries, information technology, and advanced manufacturing. For investors seeking expertise, the human capital here is a major advantage. Mr. Nejat Bakhsh also pointed to what sets their work apart. Features that, he says, make their products competitive, not just locally, but against foreign imports as well.
Our system costs less than half the price of comparable foreign machines. A foreign unit might cost $1.5 to $2 million, about 100 to 150 billion tumans. Ours is priced below 50 billion tumans, and the savings continue beyond purchase. Foreign machines require nearly their entire purchase cost, again, in spare parts and service over 10 years. And maintenance costs are dramatically lower, and downtime is minimal. If a hospital anywhere in Iran requests service, we restore the machine within 48 hours. Many faults can be fixed remotely through our web-based diagnostic system. Only if necessary do technicians travel to the site.
The province hosts 179 universities and over 330,000 students. Its science and technology park is home to nearly 500 companies working in photonics, nanotech, aerospace, and biotechnology. More than 200 startups are already active in IT, agriculture, and clean energy.
My advice to potential investors is this: take a serious look at Isfahan. Energy is relatively cheap here. Skilled labor is abundant and affordable. We have outstanding universities, brilliant students, and highly capable experts. All of these elements, talent, infrastructure, and knowledge, can be harnessed both for advancing technology and for generating sustainable profits.
Of course, no story about Isfahan would be complete without its tourism industry. The city boasts 22,000 registered historical sites, 9 of them UNESCO World Heritage properties.
The opportunities in our province extend across every sector. Advanced technologies, healthcare, tourism, agriculture, IT, and more. At present, we have identified around 300 viable projects under normal investment conditions. If we could draw both domestic and international capital, we believe at least 50 of these could already have attracted substantial funding.
Isfahan is one of Iran's top tourist destinations, attracting millions of visitors each year. This influx not only strengthens the hospitality, dining, and handicraft industries, it also supports a diverse, large consumer market. For businesses, it's a rare combination of cultural magnet and commercial powerhouse. Tourism generates billions in revenue and creates demand for hotels, restaurants, and health tourism facilities. Yet, with only about 20,000 hotel beds, the sector is ripe for investment. In 2020, Isfahan exported more than $2 billion in goods, from steel and petrochemicals to carpets, ceramics, and dairy. Its products reach over 120 countries, including China, Germany, Italy, India, and markets in the Persian Gulf and Eurasian Economic Union. Imports are mostly machinery and intermediate goods, reflecting an economy focused on production rather than consumption. For foreign partners, this trade profile points to opportunity in both upstream and downstream industries, from supplying equipment and technology to joint ventures in value-added exports.
Our portfolio of projects is remarkably diverse, from cultural and industrial ventures to infrastructure, clean energy, IT, high-tech manufacturing, and even traditional sectors like steel, textiles, and chemicals. Isfahan has 85 specialized industrial parks, an extraordinary number for any province. Each park has its own specialization, from aquaculture to food processing, from textiles to carpets, from footwear to precision engineering. This breadth ensures that investors from every background and with every preference can find a suitable project.
Government incentives, including tax breaks and special investment facilities in areas like the Isfahan Special Economic Zone, make it easier for both local and foreign investors to launch their projects here. These policies are designed to boost productivity, attract capital, and accelerate economic transformation.
Companies established in the science and research park enjoy powerful advantages. First, knowledge-based firms are exempt from customs duties when importing their raw materials. Second, all facilities necessary for export are already provided to them. Third, investments in these companies translate directly into tax credits. To illustrate, if an investor puts $10 billion into a knowledge-based company, that entire sum becomes a tax credit. Should that investor normally owe $1 billion per year in taxes, he would effectively enjoy a decade-long tax holiday. This framework is among the most attractive incentives available anywhere in Iran today.
Mr. Safar Nurullah added the government has finally cleared one of the biggest obstacles to investment, replacing it with incentives.
Previously, securing a business license could take 6 months, a year, even two. Now, Isfahan has pioneered anonymous licenses, permits that are already pre-issued and ready to be transferred. When a new investor arrives, instead of waiting endlessly, the license is immediately placed in their name and operations can begin at once. This reform is already moving ahead very successfully in the province.
After a dip in foreign investment approvals during the coronavirus pandemic and sanctions era, new reforms are starting to pay off. In the first half of 2024, foreign investment approvals in Isfahan grew more than 11-fold, with $42 million committed to new industrial and mining projects. Mr. Nejat Bakhsh also pointed to the pitfalls of old traditional industries, underscoring why the shift to knowledge-based enterprises isn't just an option, it's a necessity.
Isfahan is known as a hub of heavy industry, but we must face reality. Our current industries, steel, cement, petrochemicals, have taken a toll on the environment, often outweighing their economic benefit. Knowledge-based industries allow us to shift the economic model from one that consumes natural resources to one that harnesses human capital and intellectual power. This is not only better for the environment, but also secures long-term competitiveness.
Beyond incentives, what may be most attractive for investors is the number of projects already underway but in need of completion.
For the coming years, we have laid out an economic master frame that includes 50 flagship transformative mega projects. These projects are designed to generate annual growth of 8%. Our goal is for Isfahan to emerge as a model green province, low carbon, water efficient, and technologically advanced. Achieving this depends not only on government, but on active public participation. These projects are not to be a state-run monopolies. They are opportunities for ordinary citizens, entrepreneurs, and diaspora Iranians to invest directly.
Across Isfahan province, 1,690 partially completed projects have been defined in sectors such as industry, tourism, and cultural heritage. With physical progress between 60 to 90%, these projects are primed for completion, awaiting the capital, knowledge, and expertise that investors can bring. Finishing them for Isfahan could result in an economic leap forward. Now is the time for global partners to join this journey and share in the rewards of its transformation.
Recently, the Ministry of Interior ranked Isfahan among the top five provinces nationwide in investment climate, alongside East and West Azerbaijan, Yazd and Hormozgan. But unlike those border provinces, Isfahan and Yazd are landlocked. Our strength lies instead in centuries of mercantile culture stretching back to the Silk Road. The people of Isfahan have long been recognized as entrepreneurs, traders, and economic innovators. And that matters greatly for investors. Beyond official guarantees, you have the enduring support of a community that values business and welcomes partners. Even if governments change, the culture of investment remains. That stability is perhaps Isfahan's strongest guarantee.
These projects range from greenhouse complexes and food processing plants to hotels, museums, and industrial equipment factories. For investors, the groundwork is already laid. What remains is the injection of capital and know-how. So where exactly should investors look? The list is long. Downstream industries, automotive parts, consumer goods, machinery, and processed metals. Agribusiness, food processing, packaging, and smart irrigation. Technology, joint ventures in photonics, aerospace, electronics, and medical devices. Tourism, hotels, wellness centers, and eco-resorts. Logistics, cargo terminals, warehousing, and cold storage tied to the North-South corridor. Mining, decorative stone, marble, and non-ferrous metals such as copper and zinc. Of course, investors ask about risks. Sanctions and financial restrictions remain hurdles. Bureaucracy and currency volatility add layers of complexity, but the province has shown resilience. Even during years of economic pressure, its industries maintained production, its farmers continued exporting, and its research institutions kept innovating.
Unlike traditional industries, investments in knowledge and technology cannot be blocked by sanctions. Knowledge travels through people and ideas, not through containers at customs. That makes it the safest and most profitable form of international cooperation under current global conditions. Iranian companies are already prepared to collaborate with foreign partners, splitting the process. Research and advancement development in Iran, final production in the partner country, with skills and expertise exchanged over time. This model ensures both sides benefit.
Then Mr. Nejat Bakh showed us a piece of equipment they had no choice but to build themselves. Developed under the pressure of sanctions when importing was no longer an option.
We also had to develop our own specialized glass-making equipment. Radiation tubes for X-ray and accelerator devices require highly specific glass, fused precisely with ceramic components. Buying such equipment abroad would mean tens of millions of dollars in investment in specialized factories. Instead, with creativity and custom-built tools, we designed and built our own system, overcoming what at first seemed impossible.
More importantly, Isfahan is positioning itself within regional trade networks. Preferential agreements with Eurasian countries, growing ties with the Persian Gulf countries, and cross-border banking reforms are opening new paths for international cooperation. The story of Isfahan is ultimately about transformation. It is a place where domes from the 17th century rise above 21st century steel plants, where bazaars selling carpets and copperwork sit beside science parks buzzing with startups. For investors, Isfahan offers not just a market but a partnership, a chance to tap into its human capital, its industries, and its strategic location. Half the world isn't just a nickname, it's a vision. A city that blends heritage and opportunity, ready to share its wealth of culture and commerce with those bold enough to invest. This brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me a hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history. Imam Khamenei. The Islamic Republic believes in the necessity of unity in the Islamic Ummah in the true sense of the word. And there is a precedent for it. It is not particular to our time and to the Islamic Republic era. A great marja' taqlid like the late Ayatollah Brujerdi, who was the marja' taqlid of the entire world of Shia during our youth, was a serious advocate of the Islamic unity. He seriously advocated close relations between Islamic denominations. He was in contact with the great personalities of the world of Islam and of Sunni Islam, and he would speak to them frequently. This is a heartfelt and deep belief. Some people think or pretend that this is a political tactic, but this is not the case because it is based on heartfelt faith. We believe in this, and we believe that Allah the Exalted has asked us to do this. Of course, there are different levels of unity. There are different levels for the unity of the world of Islam. The lowest level is that Islamic societies, Islamic countries, Islamic governments, Islamic ethnicities, and Islamic denominations avoid transgressing against, confronting, and harming one another. This is the first step. A higher level is that as well as refusing to harm one another, the world of Islam should join hands against a common enemy and that they should defend one another with true and sufficient unity. This is a higher step. Yet, a higher level is that Islamic countries and nations should add to one another. Islamic countries are not the same in terms of science, wealth, security, and political power, and they can help and add to one another. Those who are on a higher level in every year should take the hands of those who are lower. This is another level of unity. A high level is that the entire world of Islam becomes united in order to achieve the new Islamic civilization. This is something that the Islamic Republic has chosen as its ultimate goal, achieving an Islamic civilization, one that is compatible with the requirements of the present era, a new Islamic civilization. These are the different levels of unity. What was the lowest level? The lowest level was that Islamic countries should avoid confronting each other and stand together in the face of a common enemy. If we had just observed this point, we would not have faced so many calamities in the world of Islam today. The issue of Palestine is the gravest disaster for the world of Islam.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
From the heart of beautiful Iran.
Turkish Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. From Tehran, a warm greetings to each and every one of you, dear listeners. Welcome to Iran Radio, your daily source of inspiration and reflection. Broadcasting from the heart of Tehran, the vibrant capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Together, we'll explore moments of faith, seek knowledge, and share stories that bridge hearts across the distances. So whenever you are at home, on the road, or taking a quiet moment, stay with us. A rich tapestry of voices, insights, and culture awaits you. First up, we have today's special. This daily program is a vibrant fusion of faith and culture, exploring various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Get ready for a right tapestry of Quranic verses, heartfelt prayers, inspiring nasheeds, insightful reports, and so much more. Then get ready to listen to the hadith of the day. Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish shares a profound hadith from the Holy Prophet and his revered family, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. You'll get a brief explanation and commentary, often trying into significant dates on your lunar or solar calendars. It's a moment of reflection you'll carry with you throughout the day. Next, tune in for another captivating segment from our very own Iran Radio's productions. Following that, it's time for Let's Recite the Quran. This program draws you closer to the Holy Book, guiding you through eloquent recitation at level 2. We'll explore tajweed points through a compare and match method, applying them to the beautiful verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. Today's special will be back later, so stick around.